The second quarter's off with a bang, and this is The Week That Was. I'm Stephen Gunyan. My co-host, Julieta Talevi, joining us for our weekly romp is Just One Lap's Simon Bronn. And I would say that the markets aren't really off with a bang, more like a damp squib, Simon.
They are. So first quarter, we were down around 7% odd. If we take the high of November last year, which was the all-time high, and obviously this is ahead of elective conference and all the rest, 52,200 on the top 40, down to the low of Tuesday, almost 16%. This is a proper correction. This is the real McCoy. Something which should frankly happen every three or so years, just that certainly we went sideways and the US just had its, you know, longest period of just, you know, upwards and onwards that I don't know, since who knows.
I mean, it didn't feel very damp. It felt quite explosive because we've been yanked all over the place, certainly in the last few days, and mainly thanks to Trump and Xi squaring
and massive intraday
swings. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so and that's what it has been. It has been it's been quite violent. Volatility has increased fairly markedly. And that typically happens in a downward market. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, just an example, my stops on my Aussie trading are 50% bigger than they were in November. So, you know, that's just more wiggle room and the like. And Tuesday was insane. I mean, all the way down and then almost a green close, which from a technical analyst perspective is a massive reversal signal. And we've kind of bounced nicely, but last I saw, market now seems a little bit stuck. I think in a sense waiting for direction, maybe a little internally, but I think really looking across to see what the crazy Americans are doing.
Yeah, so waiting really for Trump's next comments. And it doesn't matter how much his economic advisors try to downplay his comments, he comes out with more.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Barack Obama went in, and this was still the days of what were those fancy phones that everyone had, Blackberries. And there was all the concern about security and him twittering and everything like that. And well, 8 years later, we've just got this oak who just goes crazy.
Indeed, but Brad Kamala made a really interesting point when he was on Stockwatch earlier this week, and he said, Trump loved to take credit for the markets doing well. So if the markets do really badly under all these these tariff proposals, surely he would stop and think, and he would backpedal a bit, because
because
the last thing what Trump wants is a market that falls in a heap on his watch.
That would require large amounts of sanity and thought and IQ and the like. So Trump's method is quite simple. When things go well, he claims credit. When things go poorly, he dodges it and he will blame somebody else, anybody else. And his, you know, to us sitting here and to the viewers and the like, we see through it. But to his support base, which is truly who he's tweeting to, he's not tweeting for us, he's tweeting for a support base, they don't care.
No, but his support base does care because they're the ones getting affected by the tariff increases.
I know, but I mean, but they will spin it in that it's a good thing because there's probably 10 steel workers out there who might not lose their job or some nonsense like that. I mean, if you play through it, it is megalomania gone crazy, and it is hurting. And we saw it with the healthcare bill of last year, where a number of his supporters were suddenly on Twitter saying, like, what the heck happened? And it's like, well, you voted for him to do this, he did it, and, you know, where's your train of thought in the process?
Do you think he's justified, though, because the U.S. ran a $375 billion deficit with China last year, and you do want to narrow that gap?
You want to narrow it, sure. Trade wars are not the way to narrow it. There's nothing in history tells us that trade wars, which is what trade tariffs lead to, nothing in history tells us that trade wars lead to better deals. There are better ways to do it. It's not an easy process.
Become more competitive?
Become more competitive. It is also changing. For example, China used to be the land of cheap electronics, and now it's the land of expensive quality electronics, such as an iPhone. Foxconn, who makes the iPhone, is building a factory in America, which will mean that they will be making smart, expensive product, etc., etc.
And in fact, most of the profits from an iPhone sale actually accrue to America and not China.
Well, to Apple, which might then sit in Ireland or somewhere, but yes.
Yeah. We're also making news this week. Iqbal survey is going really large with this one. Netcare is thrown in the towel. Spotify is doing things its way, and Steinhoff's directors have had a fun week in the ringer of public opinion. Trump and Xi are going hammer and tongs. The Biden's ministry has got what it wanted, and SARS hasn't got nearly enough. But first, while the nation bids farewell to Winnie Mandela, Jacob's in the dock. He's flying Kalula. Cyril's taking selfies on Safe, and we have no idea who we are anymore either. I mean, the world's gone. It's doing what it should. Cyril's taking public transport along with Jacob, and Jacob's had his first court appearance.
I think ex-president Zuma is trolling Cyril. He's on a plane. I can be on a plane too, etc.
Or he has to pay for his own tickets.
Well, no. As ex, you get 20 flights a year or something like that. But yeah, maybe everybody was on Mango. Is Mango?
Kalula.
Okay, so it is actually.
And he had to pay for his Pringles. He didn't have any change, apparently. It's a bit of an awkward situation all round.
But it is quite appropriate. So he appeared in the dock the first time today, on the same day that Brazil's former president, has been told to hand himself in. And we also have South Korea's former president going to jail now.
For 24 years. And it comes to the point that two things that are important. One is that we are a constitutional democracy, and it works. It absolutely works. Unfortunately, democracies, constitutions, and justice are very, very slow. With respect, the former president has been saying for 13 years he wants his day in the court. And we've all been saying, hey, man, you tell us when we've got a court for you. Corinne Warren, who now works in this building, was saying that this process could be a 5 to 10 year process.
The Stalingrad strategy is apparently what he's employing.
Yeah. And what surprises me, I know that everyone's saying it's been $37 million spent on his legal defenses, and we are amazed at that, us paying for it. Truthfully, $37 million, I'm surprised it's so little, because his lawyers have been in court more than it's good for anyone.
Well, if Mark Kingon has a target on as well, we bet as a pick of dear departed Tom Moyani with a bullseye, because his predecessor certainly hasn't helped the annual raid on our wallets. A 700 million rand shortfall, and make no mistake, the taxman is out for all you Dodgers.
We are concerned, we mentioned it this morning, about certain areas that we are seeing a drop in taxpayer compliance. And that is something that we need to actively address to ensure that we do have compliance. Our key concern is specifically the what we call agents' taxes, such as VAT and pay as you earn, where it's collected from people and then not paid over to us. And we're seeing certain segments of the economy utilizing that in cash flow. Now, that is a criminal offense, and we need to address that.
And that was a very interesting one, where companies are actually collecting PAYE and VAT and then using it for their own purposes. And I suppose that's what happens when credibility of something like SARS goes out the window.
I think credibility, but I think a bigger issue is it happens when you've got cash flow crunch in your business. You're struggling to keep your business going. It's been very tough out there the last 3, 4, 5 years in this economy. And suddenly a pile of cash, you know, you pay a salary, but you hold some back. And your plan is probably, we'll do it, but I just need to get through this. And it's the usual, you know, how fraud, and this is fraud, starts. So, yeah, a little bit, and the next thing you're in a hole so deep and you've taken 700 billion like the Guptas.
Yeah. And you get away with it, I think.
Well,
and
so that's
because
the point.
SARS's administrative capacities have diminished in the last couple of years, especially under Tom Moyani.
Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of...
So maybe that's the thing. I remember, I'm no longer VAT registered, but when I was, I don't know what it was, but it was fairly quick after a late payment. And there's a phone call from the SARS lady in Pantan, Mr. Brown, we want your monies, type of scenario. And you know, you go and pay it. Whereas now, probably the phone call doesn't come.
Mm. Mind you, South Africa gets mining again, and the receiver of revenue might have more coins to jingle. The Chamber got its declaratory order, once empowered, always empowered. And Gwede Mantashe, our mines minister, sounds surprisingly pragmatic about it all.
They talk of doing the right thing for the industry. And if that thing will make the industry work, it will benefit the workers, it will benefit community. I always tell people when I talk to them that the only thing that will make all the stakeholders benefit from mining is when there is mining happening.
So in other words, mining's got to happen. And I think Mr. Mantashe is acutely aware of you need to create a conducive environment, but it'll be very interesting to see if they do appeal, because they can appeal, because there was a minority judgment in the declaratory order that didn't agree with the other two judges.
The problem is really quite simple, and I get the point that we want BEE within mining, but here you do. So you do the 26% BEE, which is not a frictionless free process, and you can't then tell those shareholders they're never allowed to sell. That's not fair. So they have their rights, they can sell, you know, as business people would. And then the flip is, if they do so, you can't make the mine do that again. So it has to be once empowered, always empowered. And if we go back to I mean, ultimately this goes back, I suppose, to the Freedom Charter, and, you know, the minerals must belong to the people. And we have done that in a sense via the rights to the mining, whereas in the olden days the mines would own it, and now they essentially lease it, and there's royalties and the like. They're two bigger issues, I think, truthfully. One is, will mining companies trust us again? That's going to to take some time. The bigger issue is mining. Our gold mines are massively deep. Our platinum mines are not as good as they used to be, and platinum stuck at 900 odd. What are we mining? I mean, we've been mining for 120 years. Short answer, in many cases, not all, we're running out. Same with iron ore. You know, you mine the easy stuff first. We've done that for 100 plus years. Yeah. Now we're at the hard stuff.
Well, we really are going to have to find ourselves a place in this new world order. Minister Jeff Khadebe has only gone and done it, signed the IPPs after years of wrangling, and no Eskom, you won't fall over.
With this IPP of renewables, Eskom is able to recover through the tariffs that NERSA imposes to ensure that there's no negative impact into Eskom. If you look at the first two rounds of this IPP, in the financial year 2016-17, Eskom had been able to have excess of about 7.6 billion rand as a result of this program and this cost recovery mechanism.
But make no mistake, there are still plenty of detractors. Roll up Ted Blum.
If IPPs could stand on their own legs, they wouldn't need to have these guarantees for 20 years to make them viable. That's why I'm pleading for the grid to be opened and everybody to compete in the grid. And then when the tide is out, you'll see who's been swimming naked. There's been a big lie in the marketplace in terms of the cost effectiveness of the IPP.
I mean, there's so many opinions out there on whether IPPs work, whether they don't work, whether we should have nuclear or not have nuclear. So I'm actually confused about the whole issue, Simon.
I truthfully like the idea of open the grid to anyone. Let's see who's swimming naked. Unfortunately, it's a lot of our coal-powered plants that cost way more than projected and are going to need to be decommissioned in the next 5 or 10 years as these IPPs come on.
But that's interesting because he specifically talks about how coal is still our cheapest cost of electricity.
Because
and we've got 400 years worth of coal supplies.
We do have a lot of coal, but Casilla came in at what, like around 20, around 30 per unit, whereas these contracts being signed are, as I understand it, around a rand and in some cases slightly under. Mm-hmm. The point is, I agree, make it a free market, make it an open grid. Anyone, including myself, I can put panels on my roof and sell into the grid. But on the, you know, you're getting 20 years tenure. Well, in truth, so does a coal plant when it gets built. But we have a lot of very, very old infrastructure, Kooburg being one of them. Kooburg is now, what, almost 40 years old. Design life was only about 30. A lot of these plants are going to need to be decommissioned in the next 10 years in an ideal world. Now, we can extend them, but in an ideal world, when they start getting older, you want to take them out. They're expensive. And truthfully,
take them out a back door and shoot them in the head.
No, not like that. Take them out of business. Whatever. Yeah. And truthfully, the future of energy on this planet is renewable. That's just a given.
Well, after the break, Spotify streamed its place onto the markets. Facebook's on the comeback trail. Sagar Matha defies belief, and AJ is just lolling at life.
Welcome back. For a four-day week, it's been surprisingly brisk, and so it happens to be for new listings on the JSE. But we can't but think that the exchange will literally take anything it can get its listing-starved hands on if you consider the two freshest offerings, Iqbal Surveys, Sagar Matha, and the not-so-transparent Consol. In fact, both of them, well, okay, let's talk about Sagar Matha first, shall we? You've gone through the prospectus, Simon. What do you think?
240-something pages. I wouldn't put two pennies into it. I mean, we can go the long version if you like. Technically bankrupt, liabilities exceed assets. Of course, when they raise their $7.5 billion.
From who?
I'm not sure. Well, that American, Jim Rogers, and someone else are ponying up $200 million, maybe $300, which in their life is money under the couch. When they raise their $7 billion and they get their market cap of $50 billion, they sold again. They're also then a top 40 stock. And what do they own? Well, they own a newspaper group, which is loss-making. They own some websites and other bits and pieces and lots of ideas to be Africa's first unicorn, although Mark Shuttleworth might want to claim to be Africa's first unicorn. As Tom Robbins on Twitter pointed out, we don't have unicorns in Africa, we have rhinos. The short answer is that the independent media, when they bought it, took money from PRC, from the South African Clothing Textile Workers Union. Those debts are falling due in August. It's about 450, 500 million that needs to be paid. which is half of the money is owed, and this is how they're going to do it.
It does hinge on them raising at least 3 billion. So they're aiming to raise 7.5 billion rand, Simon. They need at least 3 billion, and they've already pushed out the listing date just by a few days. Do you think they're battling to get that support?
I know they're battling. I know some brokers that have been I haven't yet found a person who's interested.
And I've spoken apart from Jim.
Apart from Jim and the other American and maybe some other peeps. But you know, speaking to investors in our local market, no one's interested in this. It's old media assets and lots of hype and promise. No evidence of execution and delivery.
And what about Consol? I think Keith McLachlan said for a glass company, it's being really untransparent about its listing. It's not really giving much detail on its debts. The CEO doesn't want to do interviews yet. I suppose they haven't published their prospectus, so okay, maybe we should give them a break. But people sounding kind of iffy about this one as well.
Well, especially seeing as Nampak is currently trying to exit their glass. So the Nampak have probably, I mean, they're up there as one of the worst capital allocators that we have on the JSE. And that is not an easy competition to win.
I mean that's the competition's fierce.
In fact, this is the fiercest competition in probably our market. And it's going to be an interesting play. I mean, we went private in 2007 at the heyday of that, where a number of companies were taken off.
And just prior to the financial crisis.
And some of them a lot less successfully. Edcon is the one that very much springs to mind. And we'll see. Packaging glass, I mean, certainly glass is a nice packaging material. There's a lot to be said for it. It is recyclable, so it's considered green. They're not doing as much recycling as the paper industry or the aluminium industry is doing. And I heard a man in the wireless who's in charge of it, and his reasons why frankly seemed lame. But let's see. Ultimately, it's about valuations. And the old school thinking, which my grandfather taught me back in the 80s, is you want packaging companies when you've got strong GDP growth, because, you know, more to package.
In a recovering economy, though, and with some of the clients they have, so AB InBev, one of their biggest clients, I mean, Consol is a well-known brand.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Nobody knows the Nampak glass brand.
And in a recovering economy and with Africa operations, et cetera, we need to see the valuation. We need to know what price are they bringing it to market. You know, if the price is right, then they're worth a gamble. If not, then not.
Mm. Okay, meanwhile, with 2 weeks to go to AGM time, Steinhoff's backpedaling a bit on its non-executive pay proposals, while Marcus continues to whoop it up in Hermanus. That vaunted property portfolio is looking a lot less valuable, like just about everything else on its books. So it's worth half of what they thought it was.
Half it was, and then, of course, what about the local property? And they've got a bunch, you know, there must be some. Although obviously, Steinhoff itself these days has a lot less locally, mostly held via the 70-odd% they hold in Steinhoff Africa Retail. It's not a surprise. And I remember on the day when this happened, and David and I were saying there will be a drip of bad news coming for a long time for two reasons. One is because, truthfully, the company doesn't know. And because, secondly, they're going to try and manage the process rather than just let it all out. But they don't know any better than we do.
I mean, to some extent, I do feel for the supervisory board directors because, sure. And Heather Sonsa, I sent her a bunch of questions. And so, though there was a lot of outrage about the fact that they were proposing to remunerate themselves extra, they have had to put in a huge amount of work. They had to take over because the company lost its CEO. They basically had to step in and salvage the thing and stop it from going under.
And they're having all those meetings with the bankers and
yes,
the regulators.
Maybe. I mean, if they'd done their job properly in the first place, we wouldn't be where we are right now. So perhaps we should pay them now for the extra work they did, but maybe we want to claim back the money for the work they didn't do in net we even.
I mean, it's 500,000 euros was the additional payment they wanted to get paid on top of what they already get paid as supervisory board directors. That's 7.5 million rand between the three of them.
And I do appreciate that in the big picture, 7.5 million is small. I also appreciate that they're suddenly logging lots of hours, which they weren't doing before. We can debate if perhaps they should have, but I think Steinhoff perhaps needs to also read the tone of the market a little bit.
Yeah. Well, over in the virtual world where money is being made and fortunes are actually growing, this week saw the listing of Spotify. Not your average IPO. The music streaming service opted for a direct listing with no pomp and circumstance, according to founder Daniel Ek. And here he was on listing day, courtesy of CBS.
When you look at our company, and when I started thinking about this, we started this company when I was 23 years old.
What were you thinking at the time?
Well, I mean, for me, as someone growing up in a suburb, working class suburb in Stockholm, I couldn't afford all the music. So back in 98, 99, I was really thinking about how I could get all that music and do it in a legal way while at the same time compensating the artist. Mm-hmm. And that's where the idea of Spotify came up. And so we're now like a decade into that journey. And I really just feel like we're in the second inning.
And on facing down rivals like Apple.
What we've found is when we've got competition, it actually grows the market because more people are now talking about streaming. It's easy to forget that just 3 years ago, even in the US, streaming wasn't really a thing. It was still downloading songs. So this helps educate the market, and that's equally true across the world.
Mm. I confess I still buy CDs. I haven't got on tapes though.
Okay, I buy vinyl, but that's because I'm flashbacking to my youth. I don't buy CDs anymore. I love the way they're listed. Get rid of the bankers and their exorbitant fees. We've got shareholders. Boom, we're on market. Buy them. Don't buy them.
Yeah, I mean, it took a few hours, didn't it? I'm not entirely clear about a direct listing, but as you say, there wasn't pump. There's no roadshow.
Yeah, there's no
raising capital.
No roadshows, none of that sort of thing. And obviously, they have shareholders because they've had VC money over the years, etc., and angel funding. And you cut out what can be an expensive process. And this is a company that's not profitable yet. It's still losing money.
Mm. Valuation of $21 billion. Not too shabby.
It's a lot. I mean, I hear his point around competition is good. Ultimately, I think we probably settle globally on a few. They're less big in the US. They were big in Europe. They went to the US a little bit later. Obviously, there's also Tidal and many others, and then some like Audio, which have closed down already. Microsoft's got Geezer, I think it's called, and a whole bunch of others. I think we will shake out to a few big players. I think they will be one of the big players, and it'll ultimately be profitable for them. We can debate. I mean, the musician made a lot more off the CD than they did off the download, but at least we're not, you know, 98, with respect, I was not paying for music because Napster existed.
Mm. But while X got the markets on his side, Facebook's in one massive PR campaign to win it back. It doesn't help when data on 87 million users goes rogue, but Zuckerberg says there's no impact yet on the dumb Watsies using the service, and Sheryl Sandberg certainly does a good mea culpa.
Hmm. We can't use the term on TV. It's too unfriendly as to what Zuckerberg called his prospective Facebook customers back in the day. Do you think they're going to win the PR war?
I don't, probably not. I mean, so far they're handling it incredibly badly. But truthfully, when you're a company of their size with almost 2 billion users, you almost can afford to. And perhaps more importantly is, are users abandoning Facebook? So some high profile. Elon Musk deleted the SpaceX and Tesla Facebook pages. But short answer, I'm not convinced that we're going to see it. Because for its original purpose, which was, you know, showing off to your friends and family, where else do you go? So you go to...
Are advertisers abandoning it though?
So that's going to be the big change. And I've placed adverts on Facebook, and the level of granularity you can do is absolutely, I mean, wonderful for the advertising side. I think some of them will, you know, and Playboy left, and frankly I was surprised that they were there because I didn't think you could have nudity, but anyway.
You can't.
So what was Playboy, they're publishing their articles.
I mean, that's why people bought it, right?
Not me. Sorry.
I think there's other science for those pictures.
But I think ultimately, in 2 or 3 years, this is just something there, and Facebook is still out there making more money than I know what to do with. Because what do you? They promised us the granular ability to target, and they deliver, and ultimately that's what an advertiser wants. Mm.
And finally, if Marcus Juster can lunch in peace, then why should Ajay be disturbed from enjoying a stroll in the Dubai sun? Well, we'd all be tempted to rugby tackle the odious leech. South African Justin van Pletzen showed a huge amount of restraint.
AJ, how are you doing, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
Lovely to see you.
When are you going back to South Africa? Any day. The country's looking for you.
They're not looking for you.
With a sore heart.
No. They will go there any other day. They are not giving a reply. The day they give a reply, I'll go there.
They're looking for you, sir.
And that was the week that was.
Simon, thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend and a great evening.